welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven as we start our 9th season overall, our 3rd season here on the Podbean when we've gotten away from Blog Talk Radio. And this is, we started this back right before the Cardinals won the World Series in 2011 with me and Bill Ivey as part of the Seamheads Podcasting Baseball Network. And for the last 7.5 years, I have been joined by, as someone would say, the lovely and talented Tara Wellman, who is with me again tonight, Tara, from Birds on the Black and at Tara Wellman on Twitter, as we get back into our regular routine, hopefully, as Tara's travel situation gets a little bit better and the baseball comes a little bit more frequently, as the Cardinals pitchers and catchers have reported, the main team has reported. And so, Tara, there are a lot of different options here to talk about. And, you know, you and I were talking before the show about the different things that we could address. Let's get the ugly stuff out of the way first, though. Adam Wainwright had some comments this week about, the strong likelihood, and it's something that you and I have talked about, I think, and Al and I have talked over on Meet Me Mutual about the possibility that we're kind of headed toward maybe a strike. And the commissioner kind of fired back at Adam today, but it just feels like a situation that, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk probably for the next 3 years as this whole thing goes along. But right now, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of action.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think that it's a situation that people get pretty heated about, regardless of what their stance is. But I do think that it's important that all of us as fans and observers and people who sort of analyze every last piece of this, to be able to step back and see that, like, when players are talking about this stuff, I mean, this is their livelihood. And regardless of the number of zeros on their paycheck or years of experience rather that they have in the game at whatever level it is, I mean, this is their industry. This is their livelihood. This is their dream. This is their job. This is their career, however you want to put it. This is the thing that they know. If there's one thing that you would expect athletes to have an opinion about, it's professional athletics. and I think that, granted, you know, there's more than one side to every story or every argument, I just feel like it's important that we kind of recognize that they have something to say, and we're living in a time where they have a platform to say it however they want to do that. And so for Adam to respond how he did in a radio interview and then to feel like he needed to follow it up to offer some clarification on Twitter, first of all, I think says a lot about Adam and his intention in trying to be very clear with what he says and what he means and how he hopes it can be received. But I also think it shows that this is something that everyone in baseball is talking about, everyone is aware of, and everyone's really trying to figure out how to sort of weave through this mess and hopefully avoid a work stoppage in a couple of years by kind of talking it through now and figuring out where the problem spots are and, you know, maybe finding a way to lead to some compromise down the road. But it's a messy subject anytime you're talking about owners versus players or, you know, employers versus employees in any industry. And the circumstances in baseball are such that the players have a voice and they're going to stand up for themselves, for each other, just as the teams and the owners are going to sort of circle the wagons and try to stand up for their perspective on it as well. So a lot of opinions, a lot of heated conversations are going to come from something like this. Personally, I think it's great when a player as thoughtful and as intentional as Adam Wainwright can speak out on it in a way that I think was very clear and, to me, at least acknowledged that he doesn't expect everyone to understand it, but here's where they're coming from as athletes in this game, and I can certainly respect that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing, again, you can argue whether they should or should not get into other topics of the day, if political issues or social issues or whatever the case may be. And I, you know, we're not one way or another, I'm not saying that there's a right or wrong answer there, but you can argue that. You can't argue as much that they don't have a right to talk about their employment and their right. issues that are dealing with what they're going to. Now, there's a good chance that Adam Wainwright is not going to be employed when this CBA comes up. I mean, that's yep. another 3 years from now, and while Adam would probably like to tell you that he would still be pitching, you know, there's a strong likelihood he's not. But these guys have got to, again, they're paving the way for these guys that are coming up behind them, and that's what they've always been wanting to do. It is going to be very interesting as these things kind of develop, seeing how these players take to social media. That's something that was not available to them mm-hmm. back in 94 when the last strike came through, to tell their side of the story and whether it makes a difference in public opinion. Because, you know, let's be fair, owners have a lot of money too, and they have a lot of ways to influence the narrative, and a lot of times it is, how can these ball players, you know, ask for so much money to play a game? Which is a fairly very simplistic way of looking at things. But it's going to be very interesting to see people like Adam Wainwright. We've seen Christian Yelich. We've seen Justin Verlander and some others take to social media and kind of, you know, start laying their case out there. And, you know, again, if you start it now and hope maybe you can avoid something, you know, 3 years from now, instead of waking up and seeing that the problem is right there in the face and you have no time to work on it.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of where Rob Manfred's comments fall a little flat, is that, I mean, I guess if you're trying to see it from his perspective, all of a sudden you've got these players trying to get out ahead of the game and sort of win public opinion in their favor so many years ahead of that new deal. But at the same time, you know, if you're any sort of prospective business person or someone who's trying to sway an upcoming decision in your favor, it's not smart to wait till the last minute. You know, you're going to go out there and try to make a case for yourself as early and as often as possible so that you generate some leverage for yourself. And again, you know, it's a weird dynamic when you're talking about an industry that brings in like $10 billion mm-hmm. To, you know, for those of us who can't even really process that kind of money, to have such strong opinions on where that money should go or how it should be spent or how it should be allocated for those individual teams. I get it. It's a weird dynamic, and it's weird to sit, you know, in my 900 square foot condo talking about someone's paycheck that is more than, you know, I'll make in months and months. But that's the industry that they're in, right? It's not really fair to suggest that they can't want the same sort of fairness and the same sort of balance as any other industry, just because their industry happens to make a lot more money. And there are a lot of, again, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but that's why, you know, that's why these guys want to get out there and make sure that their voice can be heard when they are operating in a climate that gives them that opportunity, whereas they might not have had that opportunity in the past. So whichever side of this debate you end up on, it's really kind of smart to get it out there early and lay the groundwork for whatever your case is.
And again, we tend to focus on the guys at the top, but
yeah,
you look at those guys making, you know, minimum wage, and guys that aren't going to necessarily have a long career. If you're looking at, and yes, $500,000, which is right around the minimum, is a lot of money. But if you only make that for 3 or 4 years versus, you know, some normal guy and the rest of us that can work, you know, 30, 40, 50 years at our careers, now that money doesn't go as far. So you've got to be able to, you know, to fight for those rights as the rights are coming up. Now, I will say what Adam Wainwright said, it kind of referenced, and I think would help their case a lot in the court of public opinion, is to take on the case of the minor leaguers who are not getting paid anything. That being said, just because there's, you know, some lip service paid there, it is difficult to see if they will actually take that on. But if they did, you know, that might be a situation where they could win a lot of public opinion, because you tell a guy, hey, this guy's making, you know, $1,000 for 3 months or whatever the case may be, you know, and then paying everything out of it. That goes a lot farther than a guy that's making, you know, than Bryce Harper's $30 million a year.
Yeah, and that, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to sort of go that direction anyway, because I do think that that's an issue that a lot of kind of regular Joes are aware of or becoming aware of. It's still a huge uphill battle. I've been working with some minor leaguers trying to sort of jumpstart a project for Birds on the Black where we can kind of tell some of their stories. There's an organization out there that you should look at. It's called More Than Baseball. Jeremy Wolf started it, and he's a former minor leaguer. I've been working with him on trying to figure out how we can sort of help push their message, which is, you know, kind of an interesting perspective on it, because it's not so much the matter of the paycheck, but more they're taking the angle of a nonprofit organization that can assist those minor leaguers who don't have the funds, the actual financial wherewithal to provide for themselves when they're, you know, working towards this goal of a major league paycheck that Adam Wainwright is fighting for. But it all sort of does come full circle when you hear Adam Wainwright talk about, you know, my first check was like $250 or whatever it was. All of a sudden, that's very relatable to people. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that conversation continues to come up as we go through this next couple of years looking at that new CBA, because people are going to kind of force that question into this conversation. What do we do about the minor leagues? And I don't know. I don't like that the minor league players right now have no leverage. Mm-hmm. What they need is a strong group of current major league players who will sort of take up that cause. And it's interesting to see a number of those guys. I talked briefly with Brad Thompson about it last week, and he brought up the same thing. That first check you get, you're all excited about, and then you can't even pay rent. Mm-hmm. So there are guys who are talking about it now, which is not something we've really seen in the past. They're talking about it in light of why it's important to, you know, kind of have that fair competitive balance or whatever you want to call it once you're at the major league level, so you can kind of make up for some of those years of minor league trauma. But not everyone gets that chance. Even Adam Wainwright said it. Only 2% of those guys ever make it to the major league. So this is a bigger issue, and it's an issue that I think the owners and baseball as a whole are they're going to have to tackle this in some form. And I think that it'll be really interesting to see how those major leaguers who are finding their voice to fight for their own paycheck are willing to sort of dig a little deeper and spread the wealth, if you will, to some of those guys who may not get the same chance they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's shift gears a little bit. I don't know that it's any more of a uplifting story, but Brett Cecil came into camp this week and was basically unrecognizable, 42 pounds dropped, and finally talked a little bit about his story from last year. And I know, you know, there was a lot of kind of general references to some family issues last year, but I don't know that he'd ever really gotten into talking about it until this week. And, you know, his mother-in-law went in the hospital during spring training, and while she was there, his father-in-law passed away. And then, you know, I think that maybe even maybe some other family member had some serious issues. And then he lost his dog during the whole thing, had to put his dog down. I mean, and, you know, that's tough right there.
Just brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
So he comes into camp, and I guess it's really good to see a guy that says basically, hey, I was terrible. I didn't want to be out there. I, you know, this was a miserable season for me. And he's not putting any kind of sheen on it. He's, you know, hey, I sucked last year, you know.
Yeah.
And he's looking forward to improving this year and showing St. Louis, and we kind of have seen this a couple times, people wanting to show St. Louis the real him. That's kind of Dexter Fowler's kind of said that type of thing, too. it's going to be interesting, I think, to see if he can do that, and he's going to be kind of under the microscope this spring to see if he can.
Yeah, man, I've had a few people say to me, mostly when I was sort of taking up the Dexter Fowler cause a little while back, that's great, but why aren't you preaching the same thing about Brett Cecil? Well, I mean, the real answer to that is that we didn't know what he was dealing with. As you mentioned, it was sort of alluded to, but all sort of vague, and that's fine. I mean, it's certainly within his prerogative to keep that all very private, but it's hard to make a public comment about something that he's kept so private. So now that it's kind of out there, it is very easy to see the parallels there. It's easy to feel sympathetic for all that he went through, and to have so many things happen in sequence like that. And I know that, I mean, even the article, he said something about it might sound silly, but we had to put our dog down. As terrible as all of those other things are, don't get me wrong, you all know I'm the crazy dog person. and I just, my heart sank reading that. Because it's just another piece of that trauma that makes it so difficult. And, I would imagine most people have been there where it just feels like when it rains, it pours. And, it's hard to be at 100% for anything, much less to be physically at peak condition, mentally as strong as you need to be, when things aren't going quite like you'd want them to. So, props to him for being willing to, like you said, be so transparent and really self-aware of who he was last year and how it wasn't who he wants to be. And also for kind of taking ownership of not only last season, but the process of getting back from there, whether it's, he talked in that story about some things that have changed with his diet and, the way that he physically feels like he's more capable of pushing himself to a high level of, competitiveness. And he also said then, like, all we know right now is that I lost some weight and I look a little better. We don't know anything about how he's going to perform under pressure. And that's the next step of this. But I think, man, we talked a little bit about this briefly before we started recording, but if you add a good Brett Cecil back into this bullpen mix, all of a sudden that depth looks a whole lot better and, to use John Mozeliak's favorite word, a whole lot more complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, if you have Cecil, you have Andrew Miller, that's obviously going to be from the left side. They extended a contract to Chasen Shreve, and while it's a little bit less than $1 million, it's still a contract. That, not saying they can't get out of it fairly easy if they want to, but if Shreve looks good in camp, how do you do all this? I mean, we've talked about how fact that a lot of these guys are out of options or, aren't going anywhere like Jordan Hicks. There's not a whole lot of openness in this bullpen. And one of those ideas was, okay, well, they'll, Cecil will come in and he'll be terrible and they'll just eat the rest of his contract. But if he's not, then it comes, Luke Gregerson still has that option and we can talk about that in a minute. But, if Cecil is good, and I think we should want him to be good. I don't think we should be rooting for him to be cut because he can, if he's anything like he was in Toronto, he could be very effective from the left side. If he is, like you say, yeah, then, it's one of those good problems to have, still a problem. you don't get extra roster spots because, it's a good problem. You get to, you get some bonus there. No, it doesn't work that way. It'd be nice to be able to have Andrew Miller kind of be that guy that can come in anytime. You wouldn't have to worry about it, and give him a little bit more flexibility if you had two other lefties that could get big lefties out. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they're able to navigate this minefield that's going to be, the roster in general, because it's a cluttered roster.
Yeah, and the pitching depth is something that the Cardinals are very proud of, but it does mean some very tough decisions are going to be happening. And there are going to be guys who don't make the major league roster who would be on a handful, if not more, other major league rosters in baseball right now. So that's the beauty of a lot of this homegrown, home-developed pitching talent, the Austin Gombers, who's another guy that could very well slot into a bullpen spot, but may not really have that chance right off the top of the season if you've got a good Brett Cecil and a good Andrew Miller. I think it's hard to not see that as a bad thing, right? Because we've seen Austin Gomber at the major league level. We've seen that potential. We've seen him kind of on the horizon for a number of years now. Joe Schwarz has been a huge proponent of Austin Gomber over the years. I saw him pitch when he was in Peoria. So the talent has been there. We've sort of been waiting for him to get that chance. And we've seen a number of times with those Cardinals prospects that they don't quite get that chance because there's someone blocking them at the major league level. But the thing that I think is important to recognize is in this case, and it's not always like this. I'm sure we can find other scenarios where the guy that was blocking someone probably had no business blocking them. But in this case, if those guys ahead of him are what they are capable of being, there's a really, really compelling reason to have them on the major league roster. So it is a good problem in that it means there's plenty of talent and there's plenty of options. The tough thing is it also means sort of limiting how some of that talent is used and where it fits in to make the most out of their ability as far as the major league team is concerned. So that's where somebody with a much higher pay grade than I is going to have to make some tough decisions. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean it's a very complicated thing for somebody in that pay grade to make those decisions. It seems like so, but I mean yeah, I mean you look at Dakota Hudson, who's obviously not a lefty, but you know he's your pitcher of the year for the minor league system. He came up to the major leagues and you know was in 26 games and had a fairly successful run up there. And I really can't imagine that he's going to break camp with a major league team. And that just doesn't happen usually. Usually teams are ready to promote those guys, but there's so many of these. And it's something that you and I especially have talked about for 2 or 3 years, how John Mozeliak contends to hoard these kind of things. Yeah. And at some point in time, they need to make this trade. Well, it's a good thing they used them all last year, but it's still that bottleneck is there. And again, we haven't even gotten to the really beginning of games, although knock on whatever kind of wood, you know, by this time, most years, we've already had somebody with Tommy John surgery, so maybe we're past that point, hopefully. But, you don't know what injuries and stuff are going to happen, but if everybody's healthy, yeah, I don't see how this all fits the way it should.
I do think that it's a little bit tricky this year because we saw a number of those guys in St. Louis pitching in meaningful games last year. Now, we also saw that because of how many of them were young and how many of them were inexperienced, it seemed like they kind of ran out of gas at the end of the year. So that's something to take into account. But we did see a successful Dakota Hudson. We saw a successful Jordan Hicks, obviously. We saw Austin Gomber. We saw John Gant. We saw John Brebbia. We saw, you know, Daniel Ponce de Leon, who's another guy that could be really dynamite out of the bullpen, but maybe just doesn't have a spot. And then there's Alex Reyes, who is going to be in this mix at some point. So, and the reason we saw all those guys is because Holland wasn't great, because Dominic Leon was hurt, because there were so many other issues. And some of those guys are going to be back this year, like Dominic Leon. You mentioned Gregerson. I don't know that anyone really anticipates him making the opening day roster at this point, but it's another name that was supposed to be part of that mix last year that is back to sort of try to claim one of those spots this season. And that's why, to me, that's why this is so complicated, because they've seen that every one of those guys can be successful at the major league level. It's not like you're looking at a guy who, you know, maybe pitched late in September and had a couple of good outings. These are guys who proved that they're capable of getting major league outs on a fairly regular basis. And now you're looking at sending them back to AAA, which is, as Mike Myers said in a piece from spring training just the other day, it's a demotion. You know it's a demotion. And as much as you prepare yourself for it, and as much as you can see the logic and the reasoning and the reality of your situation, it still feels like a demotion, and there's a lot of major league talent that's going to be demoted at the end of the spring.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the offensive side of things, and, you know, you can't have – I mean, there's only three spots if you don't count – the backup catcher, and you've got to fit, Chet Jericho, Jose Martinez, Yairo Munoz, Tyler O'Neill, Drew Robinson, all into those spots. And there's a good chance that you could have, like, Munoz and O'Neill both get sent down. And both of those guys, I mean, Munoz was in the major leagues almost all year last year, and Tyler O'Neill proved easily that he has nothing left to prove in Memphis. And so for those guys, especially who know that they can compete at the major league level, to be sent down is difficult, even if they do intellectually understand the roster crunch. It's not pleasant. And, we've seen now at least they wouldn't be sitting down because, some old decrepit veteran was hitting, a little bit ahead of them. So,
Look at you, Mark Ellis. Looking at you.
I didn't name any names. I'm just saying. But I think that there's a lot of decisions that are being made. And, spring does tend to, baseball does tend to work some of these things out. But I think there are going to be some difficult things. We did say Luke Gregerson, and it was very interesting that there's a story out, I think, maybe 1 or 2 days after Pitcher's Catcher Report, about how Gregerson's healthier, he's pitching better, he's fine, and then like a day later, he's the only one that doesn't get put in one of those groups, throwing group, and so you wonder how well he actually is. I don't know. I mean, it feels like even if he's not ready for opening day, though, he's not going to go on the 60-day DL, and so that 40-man roster crunch is still going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a guy that I can't imagine breaks with this club this spring, but he's also one of those guys that has the veteran experience that the Cardinals as an organization tend to value perhaps more than some other organizations, certainly more than some fans do, and that carries a little bit of weight. So, if it's a close competition between him and somebody else, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets the nod. However, I do want to circle back to the idea that this is no longer a Mike Matheny-led team. Mm-hmm. So that veteran status may not hold quite as much weight, but that's still a little bit to be determined with Mike Schilt and with Maddox, how they sort of go about making that plan as far as their pitching puzzle. So I don't know. I mean, again, it's not that I'm wishing for Lou Gregerson to fail. It's just hard to see how he's a better option, even at the end of a good spring for him, than some of those other guys that we've already talked about.
Yeah, I don't either. We'll have to wait and see how these things all work out, and lots of things to kind of continue to look forward to as the games get started this coming Saturday. So by the time we get a chance to talk next week, we'll actually have a couple of games under our belt and probably have absolutely nothing else, nothing at least data-wise to draw conclusions from, but that won't stop us. We'll do plenty of that anyway. So until next week, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.